Ooh, wow. Wow. Someone's overexcited.
Good evening and welcome to the Town of Discovery Bay Community Services District Special Meeting. This is our first meeting in our new community center location. Roll call, please.
President Steele?
Here.
Vice President Pease?
Here.
Director Graves?
Here.
Director Lee?
Here.
Director Simon?
Here.
And let the record show Director Graves is absent.
Turn this over to legal.
You actually have one item on the agenda first, although we do need to call first before we can take the public comment. You need to call to take the public comment.
Oh.
So I don't have an agenda for discussion.
Start on mine real quick.
I'm sorry.
Any public comment?
We're going to make a, I apologize, we're going to make a phone call. We've included Kevin by teleconference. That's a note on top of your agenda. It says we have a teleconference attendee. And in order to take public comment, we do need to have Kevin available and make sure that there's no public with him.
You are in open session, about to move to closed session.
Okay.
Director Graves, this is Rod Atterbury. Just want to make sure that you have nobody from the public with you. I didn't figure you would have anybody, but we need to make sure, so now you can call for public comment here in the open session.
At this time, I'd like to have public comment. Any item on the agenda that is before the board for consideration, please come up to the front of the room and speak to the podium. There will be no dialogue between the board and their commenter. Any clarifying questions from the board must go through the chair. I see no public here. I'll close public comment, and I will now turn it over to Lee.
And we will adjourn the Town of Discovery Bay Board will adjourn to closed session in accordance with the items listed on the agenda as D1 and D2.
Came in for the wrong end. Yeah.
Returning from closed session, I'll turn it over to legal.
Returning from closed session, no reportable action.
Thank you very much. All right, we'll close the closed session. Good evening and welcome to the regular meeting of the Board of Directors of the Town of Discovery Bay. Welcome to our community center, our new configuration for our meetings moving forward. At this time, if I could have roll call, please.
President Steele?
Here.
Vice President Pease?
Here.
Director Graves? Not here. Director Lee?
Here.
Director Simon?
Here.
And let the record show that Director Graves is absent.
Thank you very much. If you'll all rise and follow Mark Simon in the Pledge of Allegiance.
Allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you very much. Public comments, individual public comments will be limited to a 3-minute time limit. During the public comments, the public may address the board on any issue within the district's jurisdiction, which is not on the agenda. The public may comment on any item on the agenda at the time that the item is before the board for consideration. Any person wishing to speak must come up and speak from the podium at the front of the room. There will be no dialogue between the board and the commenter. Any clarifying questions from the board must go through the chair. At this time, is there any public comment?
Yes.
As Brian makes his way to the podium, Brian is your new Parks and Landscape Manager. He will be starting with us on June the 1st.
Welcome.
He comes to us from St. Mary's College, where he filled a similar role. His daughter's recently getting ready, or just graduated
She's graduating this week.
From St. Mary's, and so he no longer has that tuition incentive working for him, and he lives in Discovery Bay, and we're really looking forward to having him on board.
Just about everything. I just wanted to introduce myself. I'm Brian Miller. I live at 1412 South Course. I've been a homeowner out here for about 4 years. I've got about 30 years experience in the landscape industry and the management side. I've done everything from design to digging ditches and everything in between. I've also served on a design review board for the city of Antioch. I come with a lot of experience, and I'm very excited about coming in. I'm ready to get going. I'm kind of wrapping up. They have commencement at St. Mary's College this weekend, so we're very busy setting up for that right now, and we have parties afterwards, and then I'll be off for a week, and then I'll join you on the first.
Welcome.
Great.
Thank you.
Is there any other public comment? At this time, we're going to close public comment, and we're going to move on to item C1, PG&E LS1 LED streetlight replacement program.
Thank you. With us this evening from PG&E are three gentlemen, Vic Baker, who's at the podium now. Vic, if you can go to the podium on your left, and there's a little remote control so you can run the PowerPoint. Timothy Kingsbury's in the back of the room, and sitting in the way back of the room is John Safranek. So with that, we'll go ahead and go on.
Great. I understand we have a video too, right?
Yes, we do.
Okay, so I won't go through the entire PowerPoint because we have a video, most of it. But my name is Vic Baker, senior manager, and on behalf of John Safranek, who runs our streetlight upgrade for the entire system of PG&E, and Tim Kingsbury, who's our outreach manager for all of our streets. Say thank you for having us. It was a privilege for me to come in and speak to you because I wanted to talk to you about some of the things that we're going to do. You guys heard the B-Locals initiative, insurance, commercial, radio, CNTV. But part of the B-Local initiative brought me to this particular position. I'm now the senior manager for all of Contra Costa County. What does that mean? Everything PG&E, gas, electric goes up through our team. So I wanted to, one, introduce you, and it's our job here at PG&E to be local and make local decisions, or make all decisions at the local level. Do I need it? Am I not loud enough?
The recording.
We just want to make sure for the recording that it's picking you up.
You got it. So I know we have a lot of initiatives going on here in Discovery Bay. I can't address them all at this particular moment, but maybe after, if you guys have some particular questions for me, I'd be more than happy to do my best to address those. But today I get to bring some good news. And that is, we're upgrading all of PG&E, all of LS1, PG&E's own streetlights in Discovery Bay. What I love about this is that we're the first of the 47 counties in all of Discovery Bay to do this. In all of PG&E territory to do this. You guys are amongst the first. We just completed Pittsburgh and Bay Point. We're going to be moving into Oakley. Actually, we're going to be starting here in the next week or so. Am I right, Tom? Something like that?
First week of June.
First week of June. And we have about 700 of your street lights we're going to be covering into elements. Today, I'm going to briefly talk to you about what it entails, what's happening with the, what you can expect with the LED upgrade, and what it looks like. So as you can see, we're going to begin early June, but it's going to be a two-man crew. It's going to take approximately 5 to 10 minutes per street light to get in and out of there. So we're going to be in and out of here in about a week or two to do all 700 of these. It's going to be very quick. You should see a truck just like this, with a blue just like this, two men working. Shouldn't affect any of your roadway closures. No roadway closures expected. Should be able to get around the trucks. Be very easy, very seamless. You can probably miss them. So the impact is going to be minimal, 2 to 3 weeks. But you can also see some of the before and after pictures. These were taken in Danville, I believe. The yellow lights going to the nice bright LED lights. So some of the things that we talk about are safe, reliable, affordable energy. Well, this falls in all three aspects. You know, safety, improved safety because it's higher visibility. Energy, 50 to 75% less energy usage. Right, reliable, we're looking at up to 4 times longer. You're looking at probably 20 years of life on these LEDs. Right, so less maintenance. So it saves money all over. With that said, I did say that we're going to do, 700 lights beginning in June. One of the other items I wanted to briefly talk about is when PG&E, and it's our understanding, my understanding, being moved to this position, that we didn't do a very good job with you guys or with anyone with respect to how do we outreach one of the closed jobs here at PG&E. Do you even know when we're done with our jobs? So if John is going to be, John and Tim are going to be doing, and Tim's going to be seeing outreach, is that after we close our jobs, we're one, going to send you a postcard and let you know that we're done with our work. But also send you a survey, because we're interested in knowing how well we did. How do we respond? If you had questions and you came up to our crews and talked to them, how did they respond? How did we work? How was the work left? Did we do a good job in our cleanup? That way we can address your needs at a very local level and make sure that any time after that, any new job that comes after that, we'll be able to respond to that. You'll see improvement. So with that said, if I don't have any questions, I'm not sure if you guys have any questions for me. Yes.
About your closure of your jobs.
The residents versus the town?
Yeah, are you reaching out to the residents or are you reaching out to the town members to let us know that you're closing?
It'll be the town. So you guys should, did you guys not all get?
I can speak to that for one sec. Just
want to make sure.
So as far as the outreach, as far as that's concerned, so we haven't sent it out. It's actually slated to go out tomorrow. And what we're targeting is the residents that are all throughout the town of Discovery Bay that are right in the vicinity. If you're on a street where a street light is going to be getting this LED upgrade, you should receive first a pre-letter, and that's going to let you know that this is coming in the coming weeks. It's also going to provide someone from my team, specifically, who's actually already dedicated, it's Bernardo Cortez, who's already dedicated to outreach on electric reliability projects in throughout this fixed division Diablo area across the county that he's already familiar with. He'll be the single point of contact for any inquiries. And then once we wrap up the program, we'll send a postcard out again with Bernardo's contact information. So if there's any questions, inquiries, they'll go directly to him, and we'll be able to gather those, respond as appropriate, work with the town and with the council, whoever will be the program person to make sure there's resolution on those particular inquiries. But mostly we want to let people know what's happening and where to go if they have questions.
Any other questions?
I have one though. When you're changing out the fixture, it looks like you're changing it out. And if it doesn't work, is there a program for us, a number? Because normally in the past, we take the 5 or 4-digit pole number, go in online, let PG&E know that the light's not working. Is there something else that we have to let them know that we changed out from a certain type of fixture to an LED? Just this light does not work, and then send somebody out.
Follow that exact process.
Okay, good.
What time are the trucks, or are they the truck going to be on the street from Windward?
So John, are they regular working?
I mean, that's where we pretty much take the lead from Discovery Bay. They'll tell us when we can actually operate the trucks in residential neighborhoods. So if Rick says 8 to 5, that's basically what we're doing.
So we need to ask that question first.
Well, my question would be to come back and say what, in order to expedite the process and eliminate the headache as quickly as possible, do you have a recommended time that you would like to have the crews out there?
I can answer that too. I've got crews pretty much working 12-hour days. And each crew, there'll be two-man crew in this particular area. They're averaging about 100 lights a day. So we're talking 700 lights, we're gonna be out of here pretty quick.
They're doing a 12-hour shift.
They're doing 12-hour shifts. But I can fluctuate that time however we want to fluctuate.
Thank you.
Okay.
Any other questions? All right.
Hi, my name is Tim Kingsbury. I work for the Pacific Gas and Electric Company. You may have recently received a letter in the mail informing you that we will keep upgrading the streetlights in your community. While work is taking place, you may see our contractors working in bucket trucks, like the one you see here, to reach and replace the current old fixture with a new and LED string light fixture. Each replacement is quick, simple, and only takes about 10 minutes to complete. All of our work will take place on the street between the hours of 7 a.m. to 5 p.m. At no time will we need to access your property, not before, during, or after our work. Our contractor vehicles are clearly marked with their company logo, and all crew members are required to carry photo ID per badges. And of course, are happy to show them to you at your request. For your safety, please.
Please.
Should I finish?
Yeah, should I finish?
Buffering. Buffering.
Yeah, that's weird.
Oh, my package downloaded like that.
Well, can't you just finish?
Yeah. Well, technical difficulties. This is the first time we've used this room, so I apologize for that.
The basic point, and to let folks know, is a crucial thing. We don't want people to think that someone's going to come up and want to access their property. That's a main point on this. There's actually another video that's on there that kind of talks a bit more about it. But you guys get the idea.
The long-term savings are about $25,000 a year to primarily Zone 8. However, the first few years there will be minimal savings. The buy-in of the program, the cost of the equipment, the installation, that all has to be amortized over a period of years. And PUC, we don't know how long that's going to be. It's determined by the PUC, and that'll be going to them, I believe, in July. Tim, you noted?
The next time we'll be revisited would be in 2017.
Oh, 2017, okay. But once that's revisited and once PUC identifies when that amortization period ends, it'll save us about $23,000 a year. Right now, we're about
$88,000.
I escaped from it.
Any public comment or questions?
You guys have any more questions from the board?
Good. Well, thank you very much, PG&E. We think it's a great service you provide.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Moving on to item E, President's Report and Director's Comments. Do we have any Director's Comments?
Which one?
Bobby, have any comments?
No.
Mark, just go ahead. All right, we'll move on to item E, Consent Calendar.
Second.
Favor. Aye. I move on to item F, business and action items. Number one, request to lease surplus town property to be used as transfer station of water weeds that are removed from the bays of Discovery Bay. Staff, please.
See how nice it is to sit next to me.
Thank you, Mr. President, members of the board, public here this evening. About 2 weeks ago, I received an inquiry from the Discovery Bay Community Foundation. Jim Madison is here in the room this evening, as well as from Delta Seaweed Removal, a local seaweed company based out of Discovery Bay, to utilize surplus property at one of our wastewater treatment plants for the temporary storage and eventual removal of seaweed that is removed from in and around people's bays, in and around people's docks, in a number of the bays throughout Discovery Bay. I'm sure that many of you have seen or used Matt's services in the past, and Matt's, Sally's sitting right down there in front, and he's Delta Seaweed Removal. Up until now, they've been allowed, and with Rec 800, to utilize property that is over at Chikini Ranch, which is on the screen to your immediate right. It's just the big round spot there. At the end, down towards the lighthouse, and that property, as I understand, is now for sale, and the Chikini family has limited and has begun restricting the use of that property for this type of use, and so they are looking for a new location in which to dispose of the seaweed, let it dry out, and then be able to be taken away for eventual removal. There's two locations we looked at. One is Plant 1. If you look at the screen, you see the oxidation ditch. And just above what would be on the north side of the oxidation ditch there, there's a vacant area, and there's four ponds just above that. That vacant area was originally intended as another oxidation ditch prior to the construction of plant number two down across the highway. So that piece of property has remained vacant all these years. It's really not used. It's fenced off. It's gated with a double gate. The seaweed removal process is that there's a, correct me if I'm wrong, a 24 foot barge, 12 foot wide, that's loaded up over the course of a number of days, and then it's removed at the marina on a large trailer, and it is brought currently to the Chiquini property, where a backhoe then pulls the weeds off. It's spread out, and at that point in time, they relaunch the barge. In this case, instead of going left out of the marina, it'll be heading right down what we call
Channel
Road, thank you. Heading right down Channel Road and into that location if the board so choose to move in that direction. There has been some concern regarding odor issues with respect to the weeds at that location. Prevailing winds are from the west and from the north. And it is a wastewater treatment plant that's been in place for about 30 or 40 years at this point in time, but the concern is nonetheless there. There's another location. Down at plant two, that would require crossing the highway. As you can see, it's not quite a 90 degree intersection. There's a little bit, it would require a little bit of a jog to the left and a jog to the right to cross that intersection, cross that highway. The location would actually be more preferred than plant one, with the exception of the fact that they would have to cross the highway. It is a busy highway, it is a high speed highway, and crossing that highway with about a 50 foot rig and a barge filled with seaweeds could potentially pose traffic impacts that we certainly don't want to see take place. Any terms of a potential lease would be annual. There would be escape clauses for both parties. Standard lease terms would prevail, and we would be establishing a monthly rate. If the board would like to see this come back at a future meeting, we can certainly do that. We could do that for the June 3rd meeting if you'd like. If the board would like to move sooner than that, I just did discuss with legal counsel, and you do have the ability to act this evening if you so choose. I know that both Jim Madison from the foundations here, as well as Matt and Jan Sally, and they run the Delta Seaweed Removal Company, and the two parties have teamed up to help and assist Discovery Bay residents with the process of removing the seaweed from around the docks and their bay. So that's all I have for the staff report this evening, and if you have any questions, I'd certainly be able to hopefully address them.
I see the proposal from Delta Seaweed Removal. Who is proposed that we would have this lease arrangement with?
It would be with Delta Seaweed Removal.
And the relationship with the foundation is?
They've just teamed up, and I think the foundation is doing more of the marketing aspect. I don't really know. That's how I understood it.
What we're doing is we're trying to make sure that all the docks are cleaned up, right? That's one of the things, obviously, the weeds. So what I'm doing is reaching out to all the residents and letting them know that, you know, Matt's service is available so we can go around and clean up all the weeds.
Thank you.
I think the service is needed, but I do have some concerns that are more on the legal side. What if the weeds don't get spread out and dried? How are we going to guarantee if they're going to be cleaned up? Do we have any kind of a bond? Do we have any kind of insurance? I don't personally think that the rental fee is adequate for the area. In terms of the lease, if we decided to go there, I'm flexible on that. It was mentioned in here at five years or something like that. What I would like to talk about with the legal counsel was the concern that the manager has as far as crossing the highway. Is there a liability on the town if we went in that direction there at all, or?
No, we would want to put something specific in the lease that they'll indemnify, hold us harmless for the use of the property, as well as the access.
Who owns the road, though? The dirt road going from the marina to Plant 1 or Plant 2?
We own Channel Road.
Channel Road, is that what it's called?
That's the road that runs parallel to the, yeah, there's a gate at the end over towards the marina. If you were to run down Marina Road and hang a left or the right, to the lot, as far as you can go, and you can cross over the sidewalk there, the curb, I mean, and you can enter into a gate and head down Marina Road, and we own that road.
Okay, so we're granting access to the road, and there's hundreds of farm tractors that cross that road on a weekly basis between one side of the road to the other, so I don't have a problem with traffic. I think it's a needed service in the town, and I would prefer the site too, but you know, if the smell and all those things are contained, I don't have an issue with either side.
You want to hear from?
I'm going to publicly abstain. I have a relationship with the family. I think I'm going to abstain from this.
You want to tell us how it's going, Matt, or what you think?
Hello, gentlemen. I'm Matt Saley. So, site one, the copper screen is more better site for us. We don't have to cross Highway 4. Our main concern is with the John Street 90 traffic collision avoidance, basically, on that. The site, site one is better suited for us to get in there, drop it, spread it out, and get it drying, at which point then we can remove it. We transfer it once it's dried out to site two, where it would have a lot less bulk, and so we require a lot less truck to dispose of it at site two, at which point it could be tilled back into the ground and actually increase the ground of the soil. One is our preferred, mainly because we just don't want to take that risk of crossing the highway such a large piece of equipment. So we gave it the wrong side, but
it's other than the controls I don't know
about how we're
born. It's probably a foreign trailer.
We don't move that fast. I guess on that one.
Do you look for the disposal side or the storage side?
A little of both. Site one would probably be a storage site. I guess where it would be, stored and dried out. And once we get it dried out and flipped a couple of times throughout the course of the season, it reduces its volume tremendously. And then we could take it to site two and actually put it out in the field, and it could be tilled into the soil.
Do you guys actually go through and comb out like plastics and metals or things that would float in styrofoam?
Yeah, we try to get all the styrofoam and cups and garbage that we grab up that's already mixed in there, flip flops, noodles, shoes, life vests, everything. So that would be pulled out. It's only aquatic. There's no branches. It has to be stuff that is biodegradable. So that's the stuff that, or not biodegradable, but that basically is going to impact and dry out fast. Branches don't do that. So odor-wise, if we can clip it and spread it thin, we don't have an odor. If we can spread it out and get it drying, preventing winds usually
Does your process take like a week or 7 days?
It takes a few weeks of flipping it. We usually have to flip it about 5 times to get it out and spread it about 1.5 feet thick. Any thicker, it doesn't dry as quickly. So basically getting it over a large area, even though it's not the largest amount of volume, it's spread over a large area to try to get it to dry faster. So it's mainly Digeria densa, Hydrilla, Spice plant, water hyacinth. It's every aquatic plant that is currently out in the area.
Is there water for fire access there? Is there a fire hydrant close by?
What was the question?
Is there a fire hydrant at Plant 1?
No, not a fire hydrant. No.
That's the current site down there. Unfortunately, it has become kind of a dump zone for everything. Palm fronds. There's two boats in there. A lot of logs on the left-hand side, you can see. So I've gone through and tried to actually kind of pick things apart. You got all the logs that have been yanked out by different people. All in here is actually palm fronds that came from different groups. In this general area is the seaweed. And then we have the trash that people have dumped throughout the years. So this site has been used by a lot of different people throughout the history of Discovery Bay. So there's a lot of different pieces of material on there.
Is your process seasonal, or is that a year-round operation?
Currently, we're seasonal, but as this winter, we have large amounts of hyacinth floating in, and trying to get that hyacinth back out. We would be, probably using that site continuing into the winter to help keep that hyacinth out from like where it got into the marina. And try to get it out of places like that if that type of winter happens again.
Yeah, assuming an arrangement can be made for site one, you spread your material out, it dries, what's the plan for ultimate disposal?
We can haul it away, or it could be towed back in. Preferably to be towed back into the earth because it has a lot of nitrogen and it actually helps the soil a lot.
Who would actually do the tilling and all of that?
That one's up to you. I have the ability to do it, but it comes at an added cost. We can flip it and dry it. Once we flip it and dry it, there's not a lot left compared to when it originally came. The more we can flip it, the more we can dry it, the more that it reduces its volume.
What did you do with the weeds at your current location when they were dry?
We piled them up into a pile, and then throughout the season, throughout the years, we put that pile within itself try to get it back to more of a soil.
You left it there.
Yeah, we went through and flipped it within a couple of times itself throughout the years.
What's your plan for, and you mentioned there's some non-organic products that you come up with. What's your plan for
We'll bring it down to probably the marina trash site and the 30 to 20 yards.
How often would that take place?
Probably every other week we just go through and grab our as we dump. once over.
But I mentioned the insurance or a bond. Are you planning on having those?
Yeah, we have insurance.
All right, thank you.
Mr. President, my recommendation would be to give some direction just to legal counsel and staff, and I've heard the concerns. We'll do everything in our power to protect the interest, and what I would suggest is we include a term in the lease that if you were inclined to authorize Site 1, that if it became a problem, a nuisance at Site 1 for whatever reason, within the sole discretion of your general manager, that they would move to Site 2. So at least we wouldn't abandon them in terms of a location, but may have to be moved if there was an odor issue, if there was any of these concerns that you're raising. To avoid the traffic complication, you could start at Site 1, and if it became a problem, we could just include it in the lease terms, assuming it was acceptable to the company, that we'd move it and change locations in the middle of the lease some point in time.
One more question. Do you store equipment where you'd be on Site 1?
We would like to store the backhoe and the truck and trailer when we're not using them.
Any hazardous materials, a drum or anything you store there?
No, we just need the equipment, the you know, possibly the harvester. We have a second harvester that would be on a trailer. But basically the equipment that we use for the job. So the trailer, the harvester, trailer.
How do we maintain Channel Road right now? Is it crushed aggregate, or is it watered, or how do we maintain that road?
It's just a dirt road. Since I've been here, I've never seen it maintained, but it does not get heavy use at all.
It's base rock, so it's about 8 or 10 inches of base rock, and then every few years we'll blade it, just skim it for the little potholes that we generate. But
is there a dust issue we need to worry about or anything? Dust issue?
There is a dust issue at times, but we would just probably put water down on it to keep that. We try to do that for our trucks and vehicles and trailers that use it anyway.
If I can add just a couple more things. First of all, for full disclosure, I probably should mention this initially. Matt is one of my next door neighbors. I just wanted to give you that information up front. Secondly, with respect to the hauling off of the byproduct, if you will, the organic matter once it's done, I think what I would like to do is discuss with Matt and legal the ability to, at the end of the season, haul it off site. You know, we have nitrogen issues with respect to our new regional water board mandates, and adding more nitrogen might be problematic. So that might not be an option for us. And that's why I asked the engineer his opinion on that. And so we want a little bit more information on that. But I would suspect at the end of the season, Matt, that would be probably one or two large roll-offs filled and hauled off to the dump.
Okay. Once we've flipped it and done it.
Okay. And then the second item would be that with respect to storing of equipment, I think it would be that equipment that would be necessary for the operation of the business. So if I'm not mistaken, you've got the barge, you've got a harvester, you've got a trailer, you've got a backhoe, and you've got a new harvester on order.
Correct.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, in response to full disclosure, I only a storage facility. And in looking at the proposed $300 a month for the equipment that would be proposed to be stored along with the operation of drying and all that, I don't feel that the $300 is adequate for the city's standpoint in town. So in the discussions, I would like to see a discussion about something that's a little more realistic on the fee charge. And as long as the insurance and bonding and all the other things could be worked out, and I'd be happy to review it again.
I think in the talking to Regulation 800, Jeff Conway, Bob Cicchini is kind of wants that out sooner than later because he's trying to sell the property. So I think what we'd like to do tonight is maybe even make that offer, see if we could kind of wrap it up tonight. So.
No.
Would the board be comfortable directing staff and legal counsel to work through those issues and give us a range in terms of what you're thinking in terms of rate? I mean, what I thought about doing is finding out what their rates are. What do they charge people to remove it? I assume it's a business for him, so he's making money somewhere. Don't want to bankrupt him and don't want to make it too onerous that it's no longer a valuable offer of the service that he's providing. But if you gave direction to legal counsel and staff to come up with it, then it wouldn't have to come back for you. We could work with them directly. But that's how much you're comfortable with.
How many acres is that site?
It's about a half acre. It's about 22. It's about 20,000 square feet. Well, just the section that we would. I rounded off the numbers. Let's say 30,000 square feet. But he wouldn't be using the entire site. It's 300 feet long by about 325 feet long by about 75 feet wide.
Would it be appropriate to make a motion to direct staff and legal counsel to draft a lease agreement with Delta Seaweed Removal with the admonishments that legal counsel has given us, and we put in previous lease agreements about old harmless clauses, insurance, licenses, hazardous waste, all the normal things, and then do a survey of what reasonable lease rates might be for something similar to this type of an operation, and then bring it back to the board for consideration.
I actually did some of the, we actually did some of that, and the closest we got to it, one of my staff spent about an hour and a half today trying to track down lease rates for outside storage, and it just doesn't exist over here, although she did not call River's End. The most comparable we received was a 60-foot by basically 14 by 60 for $260 a month. And that was out at Oakley RV and Boat Storage. So that's the closest we found because nobody has a site this large. And so if you were to extrapolate the number from there, you're looking at, if it's 120, I mean, that's why I guess it would depend on exactly how much you really need in terms of space so that we can extrapolate what would be a reasonable and fair price to you, but yet is also representative of the fact that we would be leasing space to you as a business, and we can't give away the auspices of public funds. So we have to be careful with that, and that's a great.
If you were to extrapolate that out for the full site, what did staff put on the term?
Rick, I think one of the issues there is that an RV and boat storage place is a lot different than an agricultural site.
I'm a commercial real estate agent and also lease land, and my experience has been in the Central Valley and Stockton that unimproved land rents for about $1,000 an acre maximum, and from $750 to $1,000 is the range for an acre. And usually there's basic access from a road and it's just flat. But that's my experience.
Well, he's doing that. I'm fine with that. I can take that as direction. I think I was trying to kind of help them out, and if you took action on this tonight, I can draft the lease is what I was attempting to do rather than just take direction to bring something back. I was hoping to, give staff and legal counsel authorization to move forward, assuming you can figure a rate and we'll protect and conclude all the other items.
That would be very helpful.
I understand. Second director lease motion.
Any public comment? All those in favor? I'm sorry.
Well, I'm just going to, before I vote, I'm just going to see what the panel came up.
They're apples and oranges. You can't compare. It's 840 square feet for $260. This would be over $7,000. You can't compare the two.
No, it couldn't be. Yeah. So I think the $750 to $1,000 range per month adequate for the city's liabilities and the ability to manage and take a look at what's going on. But we'll let staff work on that.
But you do want to see it back at the next meeting?
And another thing, I think an annual lease with renewals is okay. I don't see a 5-year lease or a 3-year lease. The whole weed abatement plan is still being formulated right now, and these guys are doing a great service, but I think it automatically renewal unless we had some other changes.
Okay, just so you know, I generally put provisions in that are a bit one-sided on that, giving you the ability to terminate the lease with 30, 60 days okay. notice without cause.
Similar to what we did before. Okay.
Absolutely.
All right, yeah. That's perfect. Yeah. All those guidelines. All right. You're called for a motion. All right, we have a motion and a second. All those in favor?
Aye.
All right, there's three.
Yeah, we'll just note the abstention.
And
absence.
Cool. All right. Thanks, you guys. So you'll get in touch with Mark. I guess we'll hook up.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Do you have legal counsel?
Sort of.
Yes, sort of. No. That's legal counsel then. Great. Thank you.
Okay, let's move on. Item F2, proposal to amend ordinance number 25 pertaining to the emergency drought regulations. Staff, please.
Thank you, Mr. President, members of the board. There's a handout for you, written F2. We should probably try and get Director Simon back before we move forward.
Okay. He's standing up front waiting for a lady.
Thank you, Mr. President, members of the board. The item before you is a proposed revision to an ordinance that was adopted by the board in September of last year that went into effect on October the 4th as a result of the drought and emergency drought regulations. Before you, there's a handout labeled F2. When the state board on May the 5th adopted their new regulations with respect to the governor's call for 25% statewide mandate reduction. Once they applied for that opportunity, once that water board approves those new rules and regs, it has to go to the Office of Administrative Law, and the Office of Administrative Law has about 10 days in order to finalize those. These are the final regs that just came out, I believe, Monday afternoon. So you're seeing them pretty much right hot off the press. They didn't make any substantive changes to what the State Board had made previously. So I wanted to make sure that we had the latest and greatest before we brought it to the board, to you. And so that's the situation this evening. There are a few new items that the State Board has implemented with respect to the drought. And those are underlined in your agenda packet, the first of which is you are not allowed to irrigate landscaping during and within 48 hours of immeasurable rainfall, that the irrigation of potable water of landscapes outside of newly constructed homes and buildings in a manner inconsistent with the regulations or other requirements established by the California Building Standards Commission and the Department of Housing and Community Development. In other words, they punted on this item. Third, the irrigation of potable water on ornamental turf of public street medians, so any grass that's in the middle of the roadways, and we do have three of those medians in Discovery Bay. We have two down on Discovery Bay Boulevard down towards the end, and we also have one on Discovery Point. And finally, the serving of drinking water, other than upon the request in eating and drinking establishments, restaurants, hotels, cafes, that sort of thing. So that would apply to us as well. So what I've done is I've attached a copy of a draft ordinance for your consideration. Based on the timing, it was good to get it before you this evening. June the 3rd, we'll get it back to you on June the 3rd if you want to move forward. and it'll become effective, I believe I noted, on July the 1st. The public hearing would be on July the 1st, and 30 days later, on August the 1st, it would become effective. So that's what we have with respect to ordinance number 25 and any revisions to that relative to the drought. If you have any questions about that, we can go ahead and address them. I do have other items I want to talk to you about with respect to the drought. If you want me to continue, I will do so. If you want me to stop and address any questions, okay. As you know, we are, in the state's words, the worst of the worst. We are at a 36% conservation level. We are at the bottom of page 12, or bottom of page 11 of basically 12 and a half pages. We are resubmitting our numbers to the state today and tomorrow. And based upon that new information, we move up one tier from the 36 to the 32% level. So we still have a lot of work to do ahead of us. I did a pretty extensive drive around town today just to kind of get a flavor for how people are doing. And there's a lot of people that are really paying attention and they're conserving. And I think we have to actually let them know that we appreciate that. But there's also a lot of people who it's obvious that the message has not hit home yet. I mentioned to you at the workshop we had a few weeks ago when Ludorf and Scalmanini was here that I was considering implementing a water and drought monitor position, a part-time position, 25 hours a week. And I have had some conversations with some of the board members regarding this subject. And unless you have any, unless there's any resistance or any opposition to that, I'm going to be moving forward with that. Secondly, we will be sending letters to, now that we know what the final regs are, to not only every Discovery Bay mailbox, but also to the absentee homeowners, those people that live outside of Discovery Bay that come in on weekends and that sort of thing. Because as you probably know, if it's a vacation home, they don't get mail. The mailman doesn't deliver, and so they would not be receiving that notice. Now that we have the new regulations, we will be able to now schedule the meeting with our local businesses that we're going to have here. And so we're moving forward with all those. So I just wanted to give the board an update on that. And I know that in Bernie's report a little bit later, you're going to see 19.5% for the last month. I think that's really great considering the prior month we were 1% over, which is really interesting because pretty much the entire state for March was up. January, February down, March for some reason was up, and April's back down again. So it's really kind of interesting when you look at the trends. So if you have any other questions about that, I'd be more than happy to answer it.
I was just going to ask, when you have the community meeting with the commercial users, is that going to be an agendized meeting that the board can attend?
It will be a public meeting here in this building, and you will certainly be invited.
Right.
There's no question at all. The board will be invited to that meeting, yes. It's not a board meeting.
Right.
It's a outreach meeting. It's important for me that we have a hammer if we have to use it. We have the ordinance in place. We have a fine structure in place. Trust me, there's people that will be receiving fines, and they've told me to go ahead and fine them or they'll sue us, but you know, that's a whole other story. But at the end of the day, I just want to make sure that from what we're doing all we can do to avoid, we're doing all we can to encourage conservation, to save water, and to avoid receiving any fines from the state for not taking the proper measures in getting that message out. So it would be to service this community $10,000 a day if we didn't do anything. So that's the direction that we've been moving in. And I know the board, at least I believe you all feel the same way.
What are we doing as far as taking some proactive measures with the homeowners associations? I took a drive into the lakes again. All I see is bright green lawns. And I see it in the country, but they're not concerned. They're inside the gated community, and I think they think it doesn't affect them.
The country club, the golf courses, you know, gets water from the Delphin, they're actually under tighter restrictions than we are. The HOAs are going to be in a separate group. We've already sent them letters, and they have indicated that they are in the process of ratcheting down their irrigation systems. but it's obvious when you drive through there that it doesn't appear. I was over in the lakes today as well as in Lakeshore today, and both communities are as lush and green as can be. And I there are certain parts of Lakeshore that are as green as lush as can be. Maybe Dina's is brown, but the other ones are not.
Can't we go after the homeowners associations? Can we find the homeowners associations?
Absolutely.
Well, that's part of that meeting.
But I understand that, but the people that live there, they're going on for a couple months in advance. I should say nobody doesn't want to stay there. But for the most part, what you see, they're not concerned.
Yeah, one of the things that I'm not sure we're going to get too in-depth into the budget this evening, but one of the items that's in the budget and that's discussed in the agenda report and the cover report is the fact that our revenues are down from our metered users, number one. And you know, we need to be able to address that for the long-term moving forward. I have discussed, and I have a proposal from Barter Wells, who you know does a lot of our financial work for us, that I received yesterday. And they want to look at different options in terms of, I forget how they termed it, drought pricing, if you will. In terms of drought, you can put a surcharge in for excessive use and for more than regular, I guess, would be normal. And so they're looking at that. That contract will be coming to the board, though, because it's more than my authority to approve. So that'll be on your June 3rd agenda.
Any other comment, discussion? Any public comment?
Move staff recommendation.
Second. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Next item, staff.
Thank you, members of the board. The next item is an item that was before the board at the last meeting. It has to do with the park rules and regulations and the fees. As Dan works his way to the podium, we did conduct a subcommittee meeting with President Steele and Director Peace. I believe it was last Tuesday, thank you. And I'll let Dan go ahead and give the presentation.
Good evening. So based on our meeting we had last Tuesday, I took subcommittee recommendations to the fees and went with their recommendations. So we look at the park fee rental schedule. We changed everything where we just made it just from a resident and a non-resident. And that goes for nonprofits and leagues and organizations. So if they're in Discovery Bay, they would get the resident rate. Anything out of Discovery Bay would get the nonprofit rate or the non-resident rate. As well as I also took out the 25 cent and 50 cent fee increments, and I rounded them up or down, you know, where I saw feasible. And then moving towards the indoor facilities, we do into the same model, except we kept the commercial rate where we feel that it's best suited for the community center to kind of get a little extra money when people come in here and try to make money themselves for whatever kind of rental they're having for commercial. So we went from the private nonprofit to a resident nonprofit. And then I have the back page, there's kind of a fee comparison with other districts using the same kind of model. Using the first one we had was the way it was 2014 with our private nonprofit, our commercial rates. And then you see on the back page, the suggested rates go into the resident nonprofit.
Well, I've reviewed the rates and I feel comfortable at this time that they seem to be adequate from my standpoint.
Okay. Yeah, I think this is a good basis moving forward, and this seems to be fair and equitable for everyone in the community. So I agree with all of these.
It's much clearer than it was before.
Any further discussion? Any public comment?
Staff recommendation. Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Thank you.
All right. Item G1, fiscal year 2015-16 and 2016-17 preliminary draft operating capital and revenue budgets.
Thank you, Mr. President, members of the board. As usual, it's a pleasure to bring you our spending plan for the coming year. As you know, it's just that, it's a plan. It gets deviated throughout the course of the year, and we try and hit the bottom line as close as we can come June 30th. This is the rollout of the budget to you. Not really looking for input. You can certainly ask it. We can spend as much time as you want this evening on it, but we will be discussing it at length next Wednesday night in this room in a budget workshop. I think it's important to note that I did mention a moment ago regarding the revenues on the water side of the house, and so we are down there. We're not exactly sure where we are. We wanted to give it another month and kind of see where we were trending, so we'll have some more data for you on that. Consistent with the rate structure that the board implemented 2 years ago, we will be entering into the third of a four-year rate structure that was approved by the board. That consisted of that authorized a 4% rate increase. We are recommending that 4% rate increase continue. The CIP U.S. average for both water and wastewater is about 4.5%, and we're looking at 4% is within those constraints, so we think that's consistent, and it's consistent with the action the board took. With that, next year we will be having to conduct another rate study. We're not going to be able to sustain increased revenue deficiencies for a much longer period of time. I believe that we're going to be drawing from reserves this next year to cover them, and it's not a sustainable model moving forward, especially as we transition the rest of the community onto water meters. It looks like we've been meeting with our vendors on that, and they think that the process can be completed within a year's time frame. So we plan on using the fall of this year to do our rollout with respect to customer reach out, getting information out, that sort of thing. So, and starting sometime after the first of the year. So unless the board has any questions, Dina has done a great job with it. I actually, for the first time, had very, very little input into the budget, and I'm sure she's very grateful for that. And I just wanted to point out that if you look at the numbers in the agenda report, our budget is $5,329,000 for our operating budget proposed for next year. Our budget this year is $5.2 million. We're looking at a 1% increase from year to year. So we really just tried to toe the line. Revenues are going to be problematic. Like I said, we will more than likely have to draw our water reserves a little bit. And we'll have some recommendations as we get closer to finalizing the budget. I also, not in this document, but I wanted to talk about it at the workshop, is a reorganization of the staff. And the possibility of doing some shuffling of the decks, if you will. And so I'll have a proposal for you, at least conceptually, at the workshop next Wednesday night. And Dina's here to answer any questions that you may have, as is Greg Harris regarding the CIP.
Question, please.
Yeah, I think it's a good document. I believe the 1% increase over last year is very modest. And we appreciate staff's input in that. The biggest concern that I have in reference to the budget, if you take a look, it's a something we have to face, and that is the community center operations. We're in the negative about $250,000 a year, plus or minus, based on what the document's indicating, best of my knowledge. And I'd like to ask staff at the workshop, if we have time, to come up with some models or some options or something. I know we can't solve the problem today or next week, but the board's going to have to face this, and we've got to look at it, and we have to start working towards something. So I'd like to have some staff input on some concepts or ideas for the board to start to think about that.
Bob, I'm sorry. I promised I would send him a report today, and I got so distracted, I failed to do so. But probably what I'll do is tomorrow I'll send out to the entire board a copy of the Barter-Wells report, that had the last community center update. You saw that probably back in October, I think. So it might be helpful to at least take another peek at it prior to the workshop next week, because that would be our starting point.
Yeah, I thought the budget would, you know, the document's very easy to read. It's easy to go through, and I'll kind of wait for the workshop before we get into all the details.
That's what the devil is.
Yeah, very easy to read. Dan, you did a great job putting this together, and 1% is not a whole lot, so I'm concerned about the constraints in our landscaping also. So look forward to that discussion with you guys. Any further discussion? Any public comment? No public comment? All right. Move on, staff. Good luck on that.
Thanks.
I guess if Yulia's next.
Yeah. All right. Yulia report, month of April 2015. Welcome, Bernie.
Thank you. So, continue to work in our safe and safe manner. General safety topics for the safety training. All reports were submitted on time. We had our core report, which also went out in April.
I know.
All wells are running. So this produced almost $75 million of water that went out in production, which was a 19.5% that Rich mentioned earlier, reduction from last month. And last year at the same time, so reduction in fact. We're still welding our parameters of our wastewater plant are still running very well. We had no excursions. All back T's on our well, our water came back negative. All lift stations are running well. Collection is done for the duration of the contract. We're just finishing up some small details and continue to do work orders and PMs and continue to improve the system. Questions?
We're full staff?
Of course. Yes.
I do have a question.
Yeah.
I don't know, Bernie, if this is for you or for district engineer, but if you look at the table that shows the wastewater effluent parameters,
yep.
And other than electrical conductivity, we're amazing at what you produce.
Yes.
Are we over-treating? Are we expending more money to treat water to the infinitesimal level rather than just meeting our requirements?
Well, we might be overfeeding a little bit. We do have extended aeration, which it stays in aeration between 15 and 18 days. So we basically eat up everything that comes in and we get rid of it. We can shorten it up a little bit, but then you push up your parameters a little bit, a little bit below our parameters a lot instead of being towing the line where any little thing, if you get a little bit upset, we'll put you over a permanent violation. So,
well, I agree with that. But I'm looking at the lab data for March and April versus the permit limits.
Mm-hmm.
And you're not anywhere near pushing the line of halfway.
No.
So would it be, is there a cost savings to running those aeration times less?
Well, they're set on a automatic. One runs all continuous,
right,
to keep a DLL. Mm-hmm. And then another one kick on if a DLL goes too low, yeah, or a kickoff goes too hot. Okay. So there is some tweaking of that, but from my experience at this facility, we've always been very low on BOD and TSS, and Greg can speak to that in more detail than me.
Yeah, the real issue is the loading of the plant's pretty low right now. So, you know, we have to design the plants for worst case, and so we have to design the plant to be a permit under worst case conditions, and you're not experiencing that right now. It flows are down. BOD loading is up a little bit, but you know, you're not at your build out, you know, with the facility yet. So your plant is going to perform better as it goes. The primary aeration is controlled by dissolved oxygen, how much dissolved oxygen you put in the water. That they held pretty low. And then the next dominant factor is how they clarifier settle. So after you have the bugs work on it, you settle in the clarifier. And the clarifiers, you know, right now we have low flow, like we have low flows like 1.4 GD, you know, they work pretty good because there's not a lot of flow through them, you know, so they settle pretty well. So, you know, that's back now. What's ironic is when we build the filters, it's going to get even better than this. So the water's going to get even better than this.
But is there any economic impact of changing the operation of the plant that maybe would increase some of that land base, nowhere near what the limit is?
Yeah. The only real adjustment that they're going to have is the flood gauge and dissolved oxygen. And dissolved oxygen just started on that control system, and it's already held to a low number. So the REIT can't change your primary energy usage. The next highest energy usage is occurring at the ultraviolet disinfection. And that's in auto, right? And set up the minimum dosing that's required. So it's pretty automated. You get some over treatment, if you would. But if you look at what we normally violate, electroconductivity and fecal coliform, total fecal is 11. So that total coliform daily maximum is 11. Yeah. And then the average is 5. 23 is the number. 23 is the number, but if you look at our historical finding, then we have, if we blow that number, it's a $9,000 fine. Yeah. So you don't have, it's not something that they want to play around with, because historically that's been their issues.
And then 23 is going to go down.
Yeah, actually, just so you know, as long as you look at the numbers, our permit crew is 23, we're getting 5, right? Yeah. So under the filter, it has to go to under 2. So that would be even less
for
prayer.
Thank you very much. Thank you, Veolia. All right, item I, manager's reports.
None this evening at this point in time. If I can think of something, I will share, but I think I've given you the biggest item is really just continuing on the drought measures, and that's taking up a lot of Virgil's time, my time, and Virgil's got a question or a comment.
Just to give the board an update on the drought, Bernie had talked about a 19% reduction as compared to 2014. The state looks at us to taking 2013 numbers, and so our April number was 26% less than 2013. So the goal was 25%, but we made 26%.
Bernie, can you add 2013 to your chart for next month so we can take that comparison as well? Thank you. Good point, Virgil.
All right. Any general manager's report at all?
No, just this room. We're, as you can tell, we're just getting used to it. We're going to have some growing pains with it, and there's still things coming that will improve it, but we hope it's functional and we hope it worked out for you this evening.
Tuning. You did a good job, Rick.
Yeah, I'm very pleased with the outcomes. Nice and comfortable. I think it presents well to the community, and we didn't put a lot of gold leaf and frills off to it.
Well, this was Farron's parting gift to you.
It's already coming off right in front of the corner. Oh, I guess we should.
Legal counsel report.
Nothing to report this evening.
All right, thanks. Any committee updates? Bill and I met at the landscape and parks meeting with staff that went really well, and we brought for a good start there. Any other committee updates? Any correspondence? It looks like we've got some fire information and aviation budget information. Any public records requests? Any future agenda items? I have one future agenda item. I'd like the board to consider a future agenda to name the baseball field at Cornell Park in honor of Darrell Whedon, who was a longtime coach and mentor and friend to a lot of the baseball community here.
Can I repeat the name?
Darrell Whedon. He's passed on recently.
But does the board have a process for naming at all? I'm not in disagreement. I don't know the fellow at all, but I think we could, just like we ran into with the dog park and folks wanting to do this or that with naming and things. But, and there's a lot on our agenda, but maybe we could let the staff think about that and plagiarize something from someplace. Bring back something so that the board and the future boards would have some goals to such a procedure.
All right. No other future agenda items at this time. I'd like to adjourn our first meeting in the community center. Thank you.